Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on the sportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar, known for delivering solar excellence since 1984 and recently voted best solar company in Marin County. We're also brought to you by Terzo, an authentic upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cow Hollow in San Francisco. Today's guest in part two of our conversation from Miami, John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Well, John, you're in Miami, and there's a lot going on there. You got a new ownership group that's going to come in as Derek Jeter's group was approved. And you got Giancarlo Stanton having an incredible season now. Let's start with the ownership situation. What do you think about Derek Jeter's group taking over? It seems like, you know, he's a real baseball savvy guy, of course. Doesn't have any experience, though, in this type of situation. I guess they just need something, right? I mean, they're not drawing that well. They have a really nice stadium. They got to figure it out there, don't they?
Anything that would drive Jeffrey Loria out of the game, I'm for. He's the Marlins owner. He ruined baseball in Montreal. He bamboozled Florida citizens by getting them to pay for a stadium with all these promises of a high payrolls, a big lie. He's crooked. He's a bad guy. And, he's built up teams and then promised to maintain those teams, and then the next day he sells everybody off, the modern-day Charlie Finley. But Finley didn't have the money. This guy has plenty of money, and now he's going to get $1.2 billion. So no love lost there. Good riddance, so long. And who better than Derek Jeter to come in and, you know, provide some goodwill, some good PR, and now maybe there'll be a representative organization. And, you know, the shenanigans will be gone. And, you know, here's the perfect guy, not a blemish on his record, and taking over a team. I was hoping Dave Stewart would have some, and I don't know to any extent that he would be involved because the group's, personnel have changed. You know, some people left, some people joined, some people moved sides, and this particular ownership, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But you can't go wrong with Derek Jeter running an organization. We'll see, though. I mean, a lot of superstar players tried to do this, whether it was Michael Jordan or Magic Johnson, trying to run a team. It's not always so easy, but he seems to be well-equipped to figure it out.
It'll be really interesting to see what they do with Giancarlo Stanton going forward, because he's really improved his value, of course. And, you know, he's having an historic season, John. I mean, 42 home runs. We still have 6 weeks to go in the season. He hit his 42nd on Sunday, and that's 250 in his career. That puts him in an elite group. I was looking at the list of there's only 12 players in the age 27 season that have been able to get that many home runs, and he's in his age 27 season. I mean, names like Hank Aaron and, of course, A-Rod, and, you know, a lot of big names are on there. He's so hot, 21 homers last 33 games. He's just such an attractive piece. I know Giants fans would love to have him out at AT&T Park, but I don't know. How far-fetched really is that?
Well, is it far-fetched? Here's a Giants team that will have Matt Cain off the books, $20 million. There are some built-in raises. We don't know yet about Johnny Cueto and whether he opts out or remains next year. That's $20+ million. They could always shed salary. There are players with big contracts that they might not necessarily appreciate anymore, even though they're the guys who signed those big contracts to bring these heroes from championships past back in the fold. So if you look at Stanton, he makes an awful lot of money. Nobody makes the money he makes. And what is it, a $325 million contract through 2027? Well, if, you know, what's this year? He's making 14 and a half. Okay. Next year, that's when it shoots up. $25 million, and then 2019, $26 million, and then the years after that, 26, 29, 29, 32, and we're in 2023 right now, 2024, 32, 2025, 32, 2026, 29, and then the last year in 2027, it comes all the way down to 25, with a $25 million club option for 2028 or a $10 million buyout.
And if he's not Barry Bonds,
but
if he's not Barry Bonds, and what I mean by that is having a great later part of your career, almost improving as you go along. If he's not that player, which most players aren't, and in fact, all but Bonds, really, then you're paying all this money, and you're not going to have a productive player when he's in his mid-30s.
You're right, and the Giants sort of owe their fans something. On the other hand, they don't want to approach or surpass that threshold, which is the unofficial salary cap, because if you go over the threshold, what is it, $200 million, and they have three times in a row now, they're paying 50 cents on the dollar, so they would really have to cut back on payroll to get somebody like this or get somebody making 20 plus million, one or two of those guys, and still be under the $200 million threshold. Because if you just count the contracts that they have, what is it, 7, 8, 9 guys, whatever they have, and we're talking Pence, and we're talking, Belt and Crawford and Posey and, everybody who's under contract next year, it's like in the $150 million range, if they don't sign another guy. And you still have to bring in, another 15 guys, 13 guys, whatever it is, that would round out a 25-man roster or 40-man roster. So if they want to get under that $200 million threshold and avoid paying taxes, luxury taxes, a fourth straight year, then they might have to forget about bringing in an expensive free agent unless they get rid of a guy or two, which is unlikely because, the Belt contract, you can't really move. They don't want to move Crawford. They don't want to move Posey. They don't want to move Bumgarner, who's got a sweetheart deal, for the team, signed for a couple more years at below market value, as Matt Moore is, though Moore has kind of struggled, so you wonder how that's going to play out. So anyway, it's a rough situation. The Giants need to honor their fans and acknowledge their fans and reward their fans for showing up every night to watch a team that's buried in last place. But on the other hand, they don't want to, in their words, break the bank by paying more luxury taxes, because the more you're over that threshold in years consecutively, the more taxes you're going to pay. So, even though Kane is going to be off the books and Cueto may or may not, I'm thinking Cueto's going to come back because of his injuries and struggles. Maybe he questions whether he's going to make $84 million over 4 years, which he's due after this season on the open market. So anyway, there are a lot of things to consider. Probably the most interesting offseason we're going to have in years.
We'll continue the conversation with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. Last offseason, it was all about trying to get a closer. That seemed like the only blemish to, at least you thought about the outfield too, but the Giants really wanted to go after Mark Melancon, and they got him, and they paid $62 million. So you talk about a big salary right there. And it's really been a lost season for Melancon because he was ineffective, and he got hurt. I mean, he's been hurt a couple times, been on the DL a long time with that pronator strain. And you did a nice story on Melancon, and he's been frustrated, obviously, and it was good of him to talk to you about it. What's your take on his mindset here going down the stretch of the season and then into next year?
Well, as he was saying the other day, you know, first of all, I don't think things can be as bad two straight years for a team like this. And what this team didn't have is a full season of Melancon, a full season of Will Smith, and a full season of Sam Dyson, who has been pretty darn good since he was horrible in Texas and was claimed by the Giants. So, you know, Dyson will remain under contract next season, as will Smith, as will Melancon, of course. So those three, suddenly you have, you know, three proven guys, and Melancon obviously needs a bounce back year. His goal, he said, was to try to finish strong and go into next year and pitch as he did the past 3 years, mm-hmm. which is why he got all this money, $62 million over 4 years. So basically it's a bullpen that hasn't had those three guys, and it's a bullpen without the core four, long gone now. They probably mistakenly relied on the younger generation of relievers to pick up the slack plus Melancon. Well, that didn't turn out too well. So it'll help next year to have three proven guys, and then whether Strickland is here, whether Osich is here, George Contos is gone, and you know what though? We just haven't seen enough over a long stretch from these young guys. Maybe Strickland notwithstanding, he's, you know, got an ERA in the low twos. He's walked an awful lot of guys, however. One bad pitch to Bryce Harper, as we all know. And so it's a dicey situation. They have so many holes, so many things to consider, the bullpen, the rotation, the lineup, the defense, that I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of news coming up here.
More with John Shea from Miami, Florida, in just a moment. Are you looking for a great place for dinner? Then you really need to try Terzo, an authentic, upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cal Hollow in San Francisco. When you sit down at your table at Terzo, you will feel the warm and welcoming ambiance. They make you feel like you're at home with great service and a delicious meal. Serving dinner only, Terzo offers unique food drawn from the Mediterranean region. They change their menu daily based on the local availability of product. Open 7 days a week, Terzo suggests reservations, but they do have a bar area available for walk-ins. Check out their website, www.terzosf.com, for daily menus and hours. Drop by Terzo at 3011 Steiner at Union Street in San Francisco for an exceptional neighborhood dining experience and your private dining needs.
Well, one thing that's going to happen for the nickname jersey weekend is that Mark Melancon is going to wear stretch on his back, which at first I thought, wait a minute, you don't want to wear stretch because of Willie McCovey. But you think about how funny it is based on that Fox story that came out with Melancon and how it really upset his teammates that he tried to change the stretch time and all that. So I like him having fun with that. It kind of reminds me of when Johnny Lemaster took the field wearing Boo on the back of his jersey.
Yeah.
You know, just having fun, being self-deprecating a little bit. I was at that game, by the way. That was just so funny. I mean, these are things that you don't forget. So I applaud Melancon for this. What do you think?
Yeah, and this might be a little more forced than the Johnny Lemaster Boo jersey because nobody else was wearing a nickname. Everyone
right.
else had the standard last name of the you know, player on the back of the jersey. But yeah, this last weekend of August, they're allowing all the players to use nicknames instead of the last names on the back of the jerseys for the weekend. And you know, some, you know, Belt has Belt, Panic has Panic. I think Posey has Posey, right? Or Buster.
He should have Gerald.
So anyway,
why don't you put Gerald, his real first name, instead?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I think younger teams like the A's have probably a lot more fun with it than the Giants, who are a little bit older and, you know, they're all whatever. If you want to do that, fine. But I think Melanson took it to a different level because, like you said, that Fox story back a month ago that suggested he rubbed teammates the wrong way mm-hmm. by altering the time of pregame stretch for relievers, pushing it back a little bit, or up rather, so that it would be closer to the game, so allow relievers to maybe work out more, relax and eat, you know, instead of just get there, get dressed, and go stretch. Now they are able to do other things before going out there. So Melanson kind of shot it down, saying that story was a stretch, that you're ripping me because of stretch. So now on the back of his jersey, it's going to be stretch. So asked about the, you know, why'd you do that? He says, well, it was right there on the table for him. He was kind of easy. So he kind of laughed. He thought it was clever. It is clever.
It is. It's kind of like Shay Hay, your nickname. I like that one. That's a good one. A play on the Willie yeah. Mays, Say Hey.
Well, it's funny because, you know, some of us in the press box or my friends and I, we just kind of, we laugh at some of the nicknames because we hear grown men, grown women calling, you know, these 20-somethings by their nickname. You know, it's like, really? I mean, do you do that at work? So I was never really a big fan of nicknames. I mean, managers, you know, La Russa, Dusty, all these guys throughout the years, you know, Bochy, you know, everybody seems to use nicknames. That's fine. You know, people in uniform when they call each other nicknames, that's fine. But it just, to me, sounds kind of weird when a grown man, a grown person, you know, refers to some, you know, Huddy. You know, Hudson. Yeah, okay. So anyway, so I got on a tangent one day, and then someone tweeted me back and said, well, wait a minute. This comes from a guy who's, Twitter handle is at John Shay Hay. Oh man, you're right. Okay, busted.
Yeah. Well, we have Panda.
So I kind of stepped back from that topic.
Right.
After that.
Well, we have Panda. We have the baby giraffe, and I'm not one to come up with names either. But I have to tell you, okay, I'm going to finish this podcast with. I'm watching Carlos Moncrief the other day, and he gets up to the plate, and immediately I just thought of Tim Rock Raines. And somebody on Twitter correctly pointed out that Rock Raines was a lot smaller. He was shorter. He only weighed 160 pounds. I didn't realize that, whereas Moncrief weighs 220. So he's a bigger version of Tim Raines, the Rock Raines. So I thought Boulder. I thought his nickname should be Boulder. Like a boulder is a big rock. He's a bit, because he kind of looks like Raines up there, just that, you know, his neck and shoulders and, you know, built for, you know, not so much power, but just a guy who really has a good body.
Well, first of all, you're going to have to ask how many people even know of Tim Raines from a younger generation, how many people remember his nickname and go on from there. But you're right, he is kind of a solid guy, you know, Tony Gwynn or Bill Madlock, Kirby Puckett, those guys kind of short and
there you go.
And,
yeah.
and thick and not your prototypical, you know, 6'1" ball player, but, you know, all the guys I mentioned, heck of, you know, just wonderful, wonderful hitters, wonderful ball players. And yeah, it's fun to watch this guy. You know, he doesn't, you know, you see his arm. As soon as he made his first throw, he suddenly had the best outfield arm on the team.
Or maybe in Giants history.
Yeah, there was a... You know who had a great arm was Shinjo back in 2002.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember a throw in Montreal where it was just like on the warning track and he just threw a strike to the plate. I said, how did that little body make that throw? But I don't think you see the great arms that you used to see. I'm not sure if... the arm is valued like it once was, you know, the days of Parker and, you know, Thomas in Boston and some of these guys who just had, you know, bazookas for arms.
I thought Jack Clark had one of the better arms mm-hmm. that I saw when I was growing up, but yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, John, hey, thanks so much for the time. You have done such a great job there on this road trip, you know, with Henry Schulman taking some time off. He picked pretty much a good road trip to relax with all of the hours you've been at the ballpark. And thank you so much for the time to do the podcast today.
Yeah, enjoyed it, Joe. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next time.
That's John Shay from the San Francisco Chronicle. Coming up on Friday, we're going to chat with Mark Purdy, who just retired from the Bay Area News Group. For now, I'm Joe Castellano.
Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.